Sure. I'm SJ Klein. I work on the One Laptop Per Child project, and we're distributing free content, free software, free open hardware projects, laptops to children in the developing world. Help them learn how to explore, help them be creative, collaborate with one another, form local networks when they're offline.
So tell me how free culture ties in. I mean, it's obvious to folks like, wow, this is... But the person who's not really sure what free culture movement is about, tell us how we need free culture in order to make it, like, how this gels together.
So for OLPC, as an example, we're working in around a dozen countries where there are 5,000 or more children collaborating together, working with their teachers, working with their school systems to try and develop new forms of education. And they're tackling the same kinds of problems. How does connection with other students work with the standard constraints of a classroom? What is it that children and their parents can do at home now that they have access to more knowledge and they have ways to, you know, publish their own materials, they have access to a small digital printing press of their own? What does it mean for them? Those kinds of questions are very similar across cultures. The answers are interesting and similar across cultures. Being able to share directly the solutions that people find and the materials that they make helps people in one country, in one language, accommodate themselves, acclimatize themselves to being exposed to the breadth of the internet much better than if everyone had to discover it on their own. And it's the spirit of sharing and of shared knowledge and of shared culture that allows people to form bonds across countries. As an example, in Uruguay, they wanted to blog in a networked, tiered way so that students were interacting with their teachers before they shared their blogs with other schools, and the schools would aggregate them into a national blog system. And they started developing an idea that they didn't know how to implement. And they reached out to people in other countries and said, here's a spec, does it make sense? Can someone help us? And a couple people from the US and someone from elsewhere in South America said, why, sure. And one of them said, I'll do product management for you. Another one said, I'm working on something similar in my country and I'll help with some programming. And they had documentation in Spanish and then translations in English and timelines set by people in the United States. And over the course of 3 months, they made something beautiful, and then they were able to get grant funding from a third country to sponsor the work for the next year. All of this was possible because they were saying, we're not just doing this for ourselves, we're releasing a project for everyone. Anyone who's using a laptop in any country will be able to share their blogs with other people. So that both gave them encouragement, it gave them this network of potential supporters, and it gave them a different sense of completion when they were done.
So let's paint two scenarios, I guess. Scenario A is if we didn't have free software. And so how, I mean, I guess I want people to see the connection between, open source and free culture and whatnot, and being able to do a project like this and how a project wouldn't be possible if we were under the traditional proprietary structure, I guess.
I'm not sure I'd say something that dramatic. I think that shared culture is much more important than the specific details of, for instance, free software. And the spirit of sharing your culture with other people is what leads communities to reach out across cultural boundaries, across language boundaries. We talk a lot about free culture, and often that has copyright overtones. That's extremely important, and that helps things scale even faster and even more in an even more scalable way. But the underlying principle is sharing. And encouraging the spirit of sharing, learning in the spirit of collaboration, that's something that makes the kind of dramatic change that OLPC is hoping for possible and even comfortable. So in a world where everything was, let's say, proprietary, not in the legal sense, but in the sense that what's mine is mine and you shouldn't worry about it, you go make your own thing, there isn't even the motive to reach out to other people because you've already closed off the universe that you want to change.
Do you feel like there can be sort of a common ground where, I guess, people are hesitant, they're like, well, sharing is good and stuff, but I do want to, be able to make some money, or, I want to, so, I mean, obviously, there's grants and things like that, but do you feel like there's a model, and this is sort of the million-dollar question, I guess, is how people can share, but at the same time, get compensation for their work, and what kind of, and maybe the definition of compensation needs to be thought to.
I don't think that compensation has any problems. it's a there's the projection at times that compensation in all fields of endeavor relates to things like copyright that involve intellectual property, permanent access to and control of a work. And actually, if you look across different disciplines and different fields, ideas of how one gets compensated differ completely. In guilds, usually the work that you do is work for hire, and once it's done, you pass it on to someone else. There's no notion of preserving your work and of being the owner of the copyright of the building that you put together, or the chair or the tables that you constructed, or even the painting that you painted. And in other areas, for instance, with authors, there's the notion of copyright has been introduced relatively recently, which has associated notions of royalties and of permanent repayment. And really, the underlying notion, which is that you should be compensated fairly for your original work, is the same in all these cases. There are historical reasons why in some places it seemed like the right thing to do was not to pay people up front, and only to pay them when there was some success on a royalty basis. There's no fundamental difference between that kind of compensation and compensating people once and making the result free for anyone to reuse. So the notion of freedom for reuse is totally independent of the notion of how one earns a living. The people who are developing software for all kinds of open source projects are developing it for a living. They get salaries. Sometimes they're paid by contract. Sometimes they're paid also by the success of their product, but it's not related to keeping other people from reusing it in the future.
Right. I like that. Give me a little tour of the laptop here.
Oh, sure. Give you a very quick tour. Actually, if we went into the bright sun, you could see that it's a sunlight readable screen. It's designed to be low power, to last for 5 years, to withstand water and dust, and to be very kid-friendly. So it's designed to be an encouraging shade of green. It has antenna ears, which are for making a local network with other laptops when you don't have access to a global network. So you can see at the top of this frame here, there are four little buttons for different Zoom levels. There's the activity you're running. There's your home view, which shows you all the activities that you can run. Each activity is an application that you can engage in, stop, and start again at any time. There you can see a little Wikipedia browser at the bottom. There's a web browser. There's some measure activities, programming environments for Python and for Smalltalk, other basic language learning, writing, calculation. And then you have your neighborhood, which shows you the network access points around you and any activities that you are sharing with others. There's a pervasive notion of collaboration. So every activity that you're carrying out can, in theory, be shared. Even if you're simply browsing Wikipedia, you might want to share that with someone else so that you could at least share bookmarks of interesting pages. So there's this little share with your neighborhood, or make it private, toggle that you get for every activity. And once you've shared something, if you go back to your neighborhood view, you'll see a little icon for what you're sharing show up in your colors. People on your network, XOs, who look like this, they all show up in a pair of colors. Activities that are started by you show up in your colors. When you chat with people, your color is associated with it. Most of the interfaces you can see has no text, has no words. There are words that show up when you hover over things, but they're not necessary for understanding what's going on. And that's the basic idea.
So tell me about the success and some stories. Maybe if you can put a human story attached to this.
Sure. The laptops are primarily being used right now in Peru and Uruguay. And in Uruguay, they've decided to do one laptop for every primary school student in the country. And this is where they began the blogging project, and they've done a number of remarkable things. They recently released an OLPC stamp, or a Project Ceibal stamp. That's the name of the product within the country. And they have a very large and active volunteer community who gets together and organizes events promoting free content and free software, practices programming, practices localization of manuals and tools that people need to do their own development. And the story that I like best that comes out of Uruguay is that they like to say that there was a teacher who was nearing retirement, and she heard that the laptops were coming to her school, and you know, she really didn't like this, she didn't like technology, and she went to her administrator and she said, please, can I retire early? I don't want to be around to see this. You know, it's been complicated. I've had a good run as a teacher. I don't need this frustration. And the paperwork took a number of weeks, and it lasted longer than expected, and the laptop showed up at her school. And she went back to the office before she could pick up her paperwork and said, actually, you know, maybe I'll put it off for another couple of years. I want to see what happens. And people have been so excited by the new energy that students bring to the class. That's been the most immediate effect.
Well, real quick, can you say, just to generate, trying to just galvanize really people to be excited about this, so what can you say about Students for Free Culture or Free Culture Movement in general, and what do you see as optimistic, do you see the future as optimistic, and if so?
I'm very optimistic about Students for Free Culture in other countries. I think people focus a lot on what's going on in different colleges in the U.S., but the notion that students can advocate for this is by itself so powerful. I mean, there is a free culture chapter in Peru. It's one of the few countries outside North America that has a chapter. And one of their members, Paola Lira, came to Boston, where I live, a couple months ago. And she was hanging out, and she joined our bi-weekly Wikipedia group. And she commented afterwards, you know, there weren't very many women in that group. I'm used to more women coming to these events. And I find it really encouraging that there are a lot of women getting involved in free culture and getting involved in these ideas of sharing in Peru and in other countries where there hasn't been very much of any of this in the past. I think having a couple role models, just having the notion of organizing events like this, will inspire people to do the same thing. Peru is hosting an open source jam for the third straight year later this month, and they're very excited about promoting these ideas. And they're drawing some inspiration from this event too.
Beautiful.